Good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, kind of a dingy to bring, June the 2018. You're tuned into the Now program, hour number two. Do want to remind you that tomorrow at 1:10 p.m. we're going to be joined by actor James Caron. You might not remember the name. Him up, 94 years old, and has been in a lot of movies. New Buster Keaton, so James Caron tomorrow at 1:10 p.m. And we also thank Marcia Warfield, best known for her role as Roz on Night Court and the TV series Empty Nest. We thank her for coming on in hour number one and talking about Bill Cosby and the Supreme Court decision about cake baking and all other things going on. Marcia Warfield, always a great friend of this program. And this hour, we're joined by another great friend of this program, and I can't believe it. I was looking at the archives recently, and we have not had her on in 6 weeks, and I can't believe that since President Trump became president, because there's always something going on. It's always a pleasure to welcome her to our microphones. She is a columnist for The Daily Beast and the McLaughlin Group. She's been on the McLaughlin Group, and it is back. And if it is not on in your area, just go to YouTube and search McLaughlin Group, and you will get all those episodes and past episodes. So if you haven't been watching, you can go back and catch up. Always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, Eleanor, I even in the introduction that the Supreme Court has weighed in on cake baking, it just doesn't seem... It's very confusing. When I first heard the news yesterday that they had ruled this way, I thought, well, that's interesting. And then when I actually read it, it's a little more complicated than people think.
Right. I mean, it's a very narrow ruling. It applies really only to this single instance. And they're basically saying that the case was tainted because the Colorado Civil Rights Commission comments that members of that commission made ahead of time sort of indicated that they were not looking at this case dispassionately, and they were making really what you could say are insulting remarks. And so they, the court, 7-2, and I still don't know the two justices who sat it out, but 7-2, so it wasn't an all conservative or all liberal ruling. It was obviously enough justices that it was a pretty commanding majority. And they basically said that the cake baker, they sided with him, that he was within his right to refuse this particular customer. But if somebody else comes into his shop and asks for a particular kind of cake that he sends a message that he doesn't agree with, he could well face yet another suit. Although he's spoken out and said he won't bake cakes for Halloween. That kind of offends his religious leanings. So he has a number of exceptions, and so the case, when you start looking at it, it's been decided very narrowly, and the court has yet to weigh in really on the question of a more broader application of that religious exemption.
The two justices that were in the minority were Ginsburg and Sotomayor.
Ah, okay. Well, that suggests that the most liberal members of the court had some qualms about how this went. They probably would have liked the court to be more definitive in standing up for LGBT people when they are consuming services that are should be open to everyone. But again, this the court ruled very, very narrowly based on some very specific incidents that occurred in the in this case. And so, I wouldn't read too much into it. I don't think it's not a clear win for either side.
It's my understanding, because when it was announced yesterday, before I had a chance to read it, the talk yesterday was this could be a slippery slope and it could possibly go into other areas for reasons people don't want to do things, not just the same-sex community. But it's my understanding that the way this is written is that, first of all, for people who were on stations yesterday talking about, well, now they can deny minorities, that minorities are protected. But for some reason, same-sex people don't fall into that category, a whole nother story. But minorities would be protected. Can't deny women, men, black, white, Asian. You can't do that. And also that this ruling, even when it comes to same-sex, it doesn't cover restaurants. It doesn't cover beverages. It's just about religious beliefs and more about his artistic, how he does these cakes.
Right, right. Well, I was on a call yesterday for reporters with the ACLU, and one of their experts said the bakery can get a get out of jail free card because of misbehavior by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, but that doesn't mean they get a license to discriminate. So yeah, so I mean, there's more challenges that lay ahead.
I want to talk a little bit about the midterms that are coming up here very quickly now. We're through some of the primaries. Our Ohio primary has now set up a gubernatorial race between former Attorney General Cordray and current Attorney General DeWine. But things have gotten very quiet 5 months out, at least here in Ohio. Do the Democrats still have as big a hold on this as they thought with the unemployment rate dropping and things of that nature?
No, I mean, I think Democrats are really worried that this could slip away. And, you know, Donald Trump is president because a lot of people underestimated him and didn't think he could possibly be president. And I think a lot of people are worried they could be underestimating him again, in terms of his ability to rev up his base to turn out. You know, typically in these midterm elections, turnout is very low, and Democrats have been banking on the fact that the resistance to Donald Trump is so energized. All of these people are running. California today, there are 27 people running for governor, which will be sorted out to the two top finishers. And you find that in many of the races in California, we multiple Democrats, so that in some cases they cancel each other out, and they could be hurting their chances. And I think I just wrote a piece for the Daily Beast about Stanley Greenberg, the Democratic pollster, revisiting Macomb County, Michigan, which is a blue-collar suburb of Detroit, and it's been sort of a bellwether for politicians for some time. It's where the Reagan Democrats first emerged, you know, Democrats who considered themselves Democrats but voted for Ronald Reagan and basically, you know, stuck with Reagan and became Republicans. And it was Greenberg's polling that showed Bill Clinton the way to win those voters back to the Democratic Party and enabled Bill Clinton to win the White House when he moved the Democratic Party more to the center. And Macomb County, Michigan, supported Barack Obama both times that he ran, and then they did not support Hillary Clinton, and they were in Donald Trump's corner. And so Greenberg went back there, and he finds that the support for Trump is still strong. White working-class men, 2-1, support Trump. And if Democrats are going to do better in places like Macomb, and I would also say in other places as well, they need a compelling economic narrative that speaks to the people who are looking at this economy that's going gangbusters, but, you know, they can't afford to send their kids to college, and they're really frustrated by the rising health care premiums. Greenberg said in some of the focus groups, people actually broke into tears describing the pressure they feel having to pay for these rising health care premiums. So Democrats have not yet really come up with a winning message other than we're not Donald Trump, and I think that's not enough. And so I think there are some cautionary tales out there for Democrats to really, they've got to up their game if they want to take back the House in November.
It's very interesting because when I look back at 2016, almost 2 years ago now, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin all went for Trump. Yet, well, not Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a little different story, but Hillary Clinton was there. President Clinton was in a lot of those states. President Obama was in a lot of those states. Joe Biden was in a lot of those states. Elizabeth Warren was in a lot of those states. Bernie Sanders was in a lot of those states and still could not change the tide. When it comes to this midterm, I assume those people will be out again, but do people want to see them? Or is it the George W. Bush factor of forget he ever existed because he didn't help us keep the White House?
Yeah, I don't know whether that whole list of people you mentioned are necessarily the key to winning. And I would say that Hillary Clinton only went to Michigan once in 2016, and she went in August, and she assured people at a manufacturing plant that she opposed the Trans-Pacific Treaty and that she would oppose it as president. But at the same time, President Obama was openly telling people that the trade treaty would be ratified after the election in the lame duck Congress, and he was calling in the platform committee of the convention and softening the anti-trade wording. And Hillary Clinton was so worried about having any space between herself and Obama on the economy. She really did run, you know, as a third term of Barack Obama on the economy. And we know from the results that didn't work. So I think, you know, the Democrats need new blood out there. Now, I do think Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, they do represent some of the energy that's out there, and I think there are probably some selected districts maybe Hillary would go to. But, you know, the Clintons in particular are yesterday, and the Democrats really need people who speak to the future out there campaigning.
Well, it's interesting because I know here in Ohio there is a big push to have President Trump come here to campaign, and they're running away from John Kasich as fast as you can, like he has some kind of sitting governor. This is what I don't understand, Eleanor. John Kasich, now, every time they refer to him on these television shows, they say a popular sitting governor. But here in Ohio, neither one of the candidates want anything to do with him. A matter of fact, Rich Cordray on a conference call said, if you're a Kasich voter, come my way, because I more represent you than the Republican would.
Right.
It's strange. So they still want President Trump, the Republicans do, but I see the Donald Trump presidency. Yes, he beat Hillary Clinton in the race, but a lot of what he was campaigning against was President Obama, the man who started the birther movement, and he won on that.
Right. He won on the birther movement, and he's been stoking up over the national anthem and whether athletes should be allowed to protest during the national anthem. This president, he understands the emotion of the vote, and he won by really stoking a lot of grievances among a certain element of people who basically did have some legitimate grievances, and he played on that. And specifically in Ohio, the Republican Trump base is still strong, and so nobody on the Republican side wants to align with John Kasich because he's been so openly opposed to Trump. So you embrace Kasich and you kiss off all the Trump voters. So that makes no sense for a Republican. And for a Democrat, I think it's great to invite Kasich voters into the Democratic camp. I mean, I think if Cordray is going to win in Ohio, which has a very strong Republican legislature, he's going to have to do it on the strength of independents or people who are not stalwart Trump backers, and so that's who he's appealing to. But he couldn't very well campaign with Kasich. Kasich wouldn't. I mean, that would be a bridge too far for Kasich as well. So you're right. Kasich is kind of the lone man out there in Ohio. And I don't know what I assume he still wants to run for president. And for a time there, I used to think, oh well, maybe he would challenge the president in the primaries in 2020. But Trump owns the Republican Party now, and I don't see how anybody, running to Trump's left, if you will, could overcome him in the Republican primaries. So Trump is proving to be a lot stronger politically, I think, than I might have imagined. And at the same time, he's fighting off all of these investigations, and I think he's really getting worried about where they might go and how he could really be threatened. So when I say he's strong politically, he is in terms of his bond with his people. But in terms of his hold on the office, I think there's a big question mark about that.
That is interesting. And I want to get into Rudy Giuliani here in a second, but just to tie a knot in what we were talking about, I think you're right about the Clintons, and Bill Clinton certainly wasn't helping himself any yesterday on the Today Show and had to apologize again last night. So yes, I think the Clintons are yesterday. I think Jimmy Carter is yesterday. But the Obamas, I don't know. That seems to be in limbo right now. People say they're popular, kind of like they say John Kasich's popular. But yet, when they go into places where Republicans win, it still doesn't change people's minds. Donald Trump was able to go into places where Democrats won and change their minds.
Mm-hmm. I think President Obama is probably worried that if he gets out there, he becomes this foil for Trump. I mean, Trump wants to undo everything that Barack Obama did. And again, with the people that Trump is appealing to, I mean, he's really turned, Obama into Satan. And so if Obama surfaces too much, it just seems that it plays into the president's hands. Now, maybe as we get closer to the midterms, he might emerge. I mean, Eric Holder, who is part of a group that Obama's involved with that's trying to challenge the gerrymandering, I think Erica Holder is going to be out there in specific races, and Eric Holder has some interest in running for president as well. So, I think it's a little early now in the campaign season, and then we get into the summer. We'll really see everybody come out of their holes in September as to who's going to really be out there full force. And I kind of don't think President Obama and Michelle Obama will, but I could be wrong.
Rudy Giuliani, we have not talked since he became President Trump's became his lawyer and kind of his front man on television. And I watched him last night on Chris Cuomo's new show. And we'll just start here. What do you make of Rudy Giuliani?
Rudy Giuliani was once a very good lawyer and prosecutor, and he really was our president immediately in 2011 when George W. Bush was kind of up in the air trying to avoid any further contact with terrorists because they didn't really know what was happening, and Giuliani filled that void and was a very powerful figure there in America. Now I look at him and I think he really, you know, sold his soul to just get on TV and be part of the game. And I don't know that he's giving President very good legal advice. I think that's not what he's about anymore. He's the public face of the White House rebuttal to the Russia investigation, and he's kind of throwing his weight around, and he's the advance team for what Trump is about to say. He's like channeling Trump about the unfettered power of the president, and the president can do anything he wants simply because he's the president, and if he wants to pardon himself, yes, he could. I think Giuliani is just throwing all this stuff out there just to see how it does, and then we see the president tweeting a lot of this stuff, so you know the two of them are on the same page. So I think it's political war. I think they kind of understand they have a tough time winning in the courts and the legal end of this, and Giuliani's leaving that up to other people. But he thinks in the court of public opinion that this aggressive stance undermining the Mueller investigation and making it seem like it's an abuse of power and all these renegade Democrats coming after a duly elected Republican president, it's based in lies, because the people heading the investigation are all, they're all registered Republicans for starters. But the president can just kind of toss this stuff out, and I don't think that the people who are in his camp are monitoring, you know, what's factual and what isn't. They just like the overall thrust that he brings, that he's, you know, fighting off government and this deep state, you know, democratic coup, and they buy all that. And if you listen to any of the focus groups that the various pollsters conduct, it's amazing how people just parrot everything the White House says. And, you know, it's a witch hunt. There's no collusion. So they've had a certain amount of success, I think, undermining the rule of law and the Mueller investigation and getting their people to believe that the president really is being victimized.
The big story in the last few days has been, can the president pardon himself? Now, on Sunday, Giuliani implied pretty much that he could, and then the president tweeted that he could. And then last night, Giuliani backed off of that a little bit. Not fully, but, you know, are they, do you think they're communicating, he and the president? Because they seem...
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Do you think
communicating, I think they talk on the phone at night. they kind of, you know, shoot the breeze is how I would. I don't think it's a formal kind of communication. And the president is saying, of course he can pardon himself, but he wouldn't. Why would he? Because he hasn't done anything wrong. I mean, that's his line. Again, this focus group that Peter Hart did, a longtime Democratic pollster, I think in Wisconsin, and it was a month or so ago, and the Republicans around the table, again, were backing the president that, you know, there's no collusion there, the investigation is going on too long, you know, why don't, it's a witch hunt. But when you ask them if the president were to fire Mueller or Sessions, or if he were to pardon himself, boy, even the most stalwart Trump backers say, oh, that would make him look guilty. So that's, you know, the president is stopping there because he knows that that could very well hasten his demise, his political demise, and could really, it's the one thing that could shift Republicans' support probably in Congress and in public opinion. If he took those steps, so he wants to do it. he steps up to the line and then, you know, forces himself back. And but you know, he's got everybody off balance, and he mistreats the Attorney General. I mean, the language he uses about him and the way he treats him is really pretty despicable. I mean, he's hoping that Jeff Sessions will just, you know, resign, won't be able to take it anymore. But so far he's staying. I think whatever differences I might have with him on many of his policies, I think it's a very good thing that he's staying in place. I think that's good.
With a year and a couple months now into this investigation, what do you think is taking the time? Because that's one of the big problems now, too, is it? The polls I see is that people feel this has drawn out way too long, and the president likes to point that out every so often. Why haven't we come to some kind of a conclusion?
Well, because it's a very complicated case of collusion involving multiple people in this country, multiple people in another country, and Mueller has brought, I think it's 19 indictments. He's got, I think, 4 guilty pleas. If you put that up against previous special counsels, which have taken far longer and not produced nearly as much in the way of conclusions, this is a narrative that the president has been able to sell, that this is taking too long. It's a complicated investigation, and it's by past standards, it's not taking that long at all. I think Giuliani is hoping that it will wrap up before the midterms, and I imagine Mueller, if he's able to do that, would like to do that as well. But if it doesn't happen, it will be the fact of the investigation will be very much a part of the midterms, with, again, the Republicans arguing that it's a witch hunt taking too long, and the Democrats saying you've got to let Robert Mueller complete his investigation, and we'll see what happens there. And then the impeachment issue always comes up, and the Republicans like to raise it because that is one thing that animates Republican voters who might otherwise not bother to vote with Trump's name not on the ballot. He's got to convince them that he's endangered if they don't show up, because the Democrats, if they capture the House, are likely to begin impeachment proceedings. And the Democrats are trying very hard to hold back the anger and the passion in their base for impeachment, because you can't get 67 votes in the Senate to convict after impeachment. You're probably just doing Trump's work. I mean, Bill Clinton was impeached, and he was not convicted in the Senate, and his polls went up. And the Democrats actually picked up seats in the midterms in 1998, when otherwise the party in power typically loses seats. So there's political peril there for Democrats if the November election is portrayed as a referendum on impeachment.
When you have 14 months of investigation, when you have the New York Attorney General involved, when you have lawyers indicted, when you have people who were part of the campaign indicted, when you have people who have already taken plea deals, guilty, witness tampering, yesterday the accusation against Paul Manafort, who ran the campaign during the convention, what is the possibility that President Trump knew nothing of what was going on with any of these people?
You know, I can't answer that question, but, you know, we've got some evidence which the Trump lawyers admitted to in a letter that they sent to Mueller a couple of months ago, actually, that the famous statement saying that the meeting in Trump Tower was all about adoption, which is a lie. The White House maintained that the president had nothing to do with that, and so his lawyers are now saying that he dictated that, or he drafted it. So it's hard to think that he didn't know anything, but, you know, that's what Mueller has to prove. And, wait and see what he comes up with.
The collusion is the word that goes around. That allegedly would be the crime. What could collusion mean? I think people hear the word, but I don't think they understand because they say, well, they didn't change any votes.
Well, working with a foreign power and a hostile foreign power, I mean, Russia is hardly an American ally, to advance your own political fortune and discredit another candidate's chances. I'm not going to call it treason, but it's highly unusual. And the penalties would range from if there were actually something of value exchanged. I mean, if they actually did get dirt on Hillary Clinton, or if they got emails, again, from a foreign power, you're running into campaign finance laws and violations there. And the president is signaling in every way he can that violating campaign finance laws is like, it's like jaywalking, really shouldn't matter. So it strikes me that, there may be something out there about that. Then you get into his whole business empire and, whether there was money laundering. And I mean, Paul Manafort is now standing out there accused of witness tampering, and he is likely to go to jail if he doesn't cooperate with Mueller. And so pressure on Manafort, again, suggests that he's got something that, Mueller wants him to give up, or Mueller wants him to cooperate. And so, I mean, there are just a lot of missing threads here, and they do go through Ukraine, and they go through Moscow, and it's whether the president was directly involved or what he knew, we don't know that, but I would be willing to wager that he will never sit down and talk to Mueller. It strikes me that it's like the income tax returns, which, remember, you always say when the audit is done, or we never saw those tax returns. So the president has something to hide. I don't know what it is, but I'm thinking we will know more once Mueller completes his investigation.
When I go back to 2016, because we are coming up on 2018, clearly the Democrats wanted to win. Hillary Clinton had her own reasons, I think, for wanting to win, that she had lost before in the primary, that she wanted to be the first woman president. I think President Obama wanted to win because the guy that was running basically started his political career at President Obama's expense. And yet, nobody ever... All these people, the President of the United States, Vice President, who didn't like him very much, former President, former First Lady, former Secretary of State, never got an inkling before this election day in 2016 that something gigantic might have been going on with Russia?
Oh, no, they did. They did. President Obama actually went to the Republican leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, and wanted to make more of a public declaration, and McConnell said, if you do that, I'll accuse you of interfering in the election. The intelligence chiefs, they revealed what they knew about Russia interference, and just a few hours after that came out, came the Access Hollywood tape, which captured everyone's attention. And then just, a day or two after the Access Hollywood tape came a flood of hacked Clinton emails, which took everybody's attention. Oh, it was made public before the election, and Harry Reid, the Democratic leader, sent a letter to Jim Comey, the FBI director, asking him to make public what many people knew, and that was that the FBI was investigating the Trump campaign for its connections with the Russians, just as they were, they had been investigating Hillary on the email thing. And for whatever reason, and Comey addressed it on his book tour, but he made the Hillary investigation very public, and the Trump investigation was kept very quiet.
Well, maybe that's what I'm... I knew that they knew, because I do remember those correlations. But I guess what I'm saying is, when it comes right down to the presidency, even if they thought she was going to win, which I think they did, when Comey did his thing 10 days before the election, they all knew that Trump was being investigated. Certainly the president knew that. Why not? I understand why not before, because then Mitch McConnell could say, well, you're tampering. Most people felt Comey was tampering when that happened 10 days before, and they knew that was not helping Hillary Clinton, and she knew it wasn't helping her. She gave a speech at that time, very upset about the whole thing. Why all those people in the Senate, the people who did know, Reid, Obama, and whoever else, why did nobody at that point say, yes, they are, the email thing is going on, but guess what? This is also going on.
Right. It was classified, I guess, and so Harry Reid sent a letter to Comey asking him to make it public. And Clinton wanted to make it bipartisan if they made any kind of announcement. That was about the Russia inclusion. I'm not sure that he wanted to go public with the FBI and Trump. I'm not sure how much he knew about that. But underlying it all was the assumption, which Comey owned up to, that surely Hillary Clinton was going to win. And if he didn't want to have a president-elect who had a FBI investigation hanging out there unresolved, so he felt he had to go ahead and clear that up before she was elected. And he didn't feel the same compulsion with Donald Trump, who he, along with a lot of people, thought was a joke, who America would never elect. It was a huge underestimation of the president's, Donald Trump's ability as a candidate and the likelihood that he might win. And he won because of three states in what Democrats thought were a blue wall that could not collapse. It was 78,000 total votes, I think, in the three states, which you could put in a good-sized football stadium. And it was almost... It was almost like a you know, kind of a freak event that put him in office. But you know, Democrats have to look seriously at how they missed the boat in 2016, and not just blame it on outside forces, but to look seriously at themselves and at their message and how to better connect with this segment of the population that Trump was so successful in attracting, based on their real and imagined grievances.
Well, and I think that's what's interesting, because the truth is that nothing is going to change what happened in 2016, and people say, well, why rehash it? Well, something similar could very well happen again, because the investigation thing that I think that puzzles people who really are looking at it was, even if Comey didn't want, because he thought Hillary was going to win, even if he didn't want a president-elect going in with this investigation, you know, pending, the investigation was not about anything to do with the election, and Comey knew that the Russian thing was to do with the election. Certainly the WikiLeaks leak was to do with the election. Julian Assange saying he wanted to make sure she was not elected. And President Obama had people, we found out later, Secret Service, watching the returns to make sure nobody tampered. So he obviously thought there was a possibility of that with Russia. I think the American people would want to know more about that than emails about what's going to happen on a singular day. The email thing was 2 years old, and even if she had done it, it had nothing to do with that particular election.
Well, and meanwhile, you have the president depicting the FBI as this, you know, nest of Democrats, when, in fact, if there is any sort of political leanings in the FBI, it would be more likely to be on the Republican side. And they did a very good job of protecting Donald Trump and his interests. And I think it was pressure from agents in the New York office on Comey, not wanting to let Hillary, you know, get off scot-free, if you will, that led Comey to wanting to lay out all his evidence. And so he in the end, he concluded it was not enough evidence that any respectful or respected prosecutor would actually indict on. By the time he laid it all out, it sounded like, you know, she was guilty but not charged, and that just it infuriated the people who opposed her. And so politically, the whole thing really, you know, backfired for Hillary Clinton, while Trump was the investigation into his behavior was protected. But, you know, to listen to him talk now, you would think that they let Hillary get off scot-free, and he's the one who's being persecuted. You know, call it the fog machine, I guess. He's very good at the fog machine.
That whole Comey thing, I think, you know, he wrote this book. That's interesting. But, you know, there are a couple things about that just don't make any sense. I can follow him up to the point of he did not want Hillary Clinton being elected with this cloud over her. But how did he know he was going to be done in 10 days? And, I mean, just the, 30 hours before the election is when he finally cleared her? How did he know he was
exactly
going to be? How did he know he was going to be done before the election? And when President Trump started banging her above the head about it, he knew about the Russian invasion. He should have said, "Well, now wait a second. He's using this to pummel her for 10 days. This might have some effect on voters."
Right. Well, yeah. Ironically, if Comey had just followed protocol for both of them and conducted those investigations in secret, maybe something would have leaked anyway. But he handled the Trump investigation the way it should have been handled, and he handled the Clinton investigation in a really bizarre way that had to do with his own kind of, I think, sense of morality and the pressures he was getting from members of Congress and from other agents. He doesn't. I did listen to the book on Audible, and he does narrate it himself. He has quite high regard for himself and his moral compass, but he does leave you really unfulfilled when he tries to explain this and the impact it obviously did have on the election.
A lot of people are asking, where is Mrs. Trump? Is she okay as far as health?
Well, she emerged last night at an event in the White House, I think, for military families. She did not speak, and Trump joked about the fact that she hadn't been seen in public for 20-some-odd days, and that she had a little problem, as he referred to it earlier, but she's fine now. And he joked about how, you know, people are saying, gee, she might be leaving him. And he said, "No, that's not true, is it, hon?" And she was sitting there in the front row, and she smiled broadly. She didn't say anything. So, I mean, this is a woman who's not all that comfortable with being First Lady. And the few things she's done well. I've got to hand that to her. And she's a very kind of a graceful, beautiful presence, almost a robotic presence. And there's a lot of, you know, wonder about, you know, the state of their marriage and how she's handling all the stuff about the porn stars and all that. Although, I mean, she's been married to him for a long time. I mean, and she must have had some inkling of his predilections. And in I was just reading this morning, there's a new book out about vice presidents, and it has this anecdote about how Melania weighed in on her husband's choice of a vice president, and she said she just wanted the person to be, quote, clean in terms of his family arrangements and his financial arrangements, as though she kind of knew that her husband had problems in both those areas. So you don't want somebody else with the similar problems. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Why do you think we have seen a barrage now in the year and a half of the Trump presidency of people come, people go, people fired, people moved out? Why is Giuliani permeating? Why is he sustaining for as much as he is out there?
Sustained by not being, Trump was sustained by the media.
Well, usually when somebody goes out there a lot, usually like what was his name? Can't think of his name. When the first press secretary left, the guy who came in and was gone in a week.
Scaramucci?
Yeah, Scaramucci.
The Mooch.
He was gone
in a week.
Yeah, they thought, boy, they'll like him because he speaks to everybody and speaks off the cuff, and he was gone. Giuliani is right not far behind him as far as saying anything, but he seems to sustain. Trump, there's no threat of firing yet. He's almost liked by the president.
Yeah, well, first of all, he's not on the payroll, I don't think. I think he's just an informal advisor. I don't think I could be wrong about that, but, I don't know that he would be, he's in firing range exactly. And, you know, they're buddies. I mean, they've known each other for a long time, and Trump likes that combative style, and the media loves the combative style. I mean, the media puts him on all the time. And I must say, then I feel like, I mean, I understand he is making news and this is an important story and all that, but almost to the exclusion of everything else, he's out there, you know, peddling the president's bull, I guess is how I see it. And he gets, you know, forums on the Sunday shows and during the week, and I think he's loving it. I mean, the guy's gone. I think he's in the middle of his third divorce. He's living alone. I think he just likes to be part of the action, and he says things that are not entirely credible. But then he kind of laughs it off the next day and says something different. It's very Trumpian.
He is the president's attorney now, is he not?
I don't know if there's actually money being exchanged. He is his attorney, and maybe I shouldn't make that distinction. Whether he's actually on the payroll, because who's paying the bills anyway? I think the Republican National Committee might be picking up the tab.
And then the big thing in this whole bit, should Martha Stewart be pardoned? What is this all about?
You know, Martha Stewart. Comey writes about that in his book. I mean, he was the FBI director at the time, and he says he was not that keen on indicting her. He said, but the evidence was so clear. It was insider trading. She knew exactly what she was doing. And so he went ahead and signed off on the indictment. You know, she's paid her dues and everything. What she did was clearly wrong. I don't think she deserves a pardon. You know, he's pardoning people who are in the same money class as him, or celebrity class. The same thing with Ron Blagojevich, the former Illinois governor. I mean, what they did was clearly wrong. Now, Blagojevich, maybe you can make the case that his sentence is excessive, and maybe Trump will commute it. There are lots of people who are not famous out there who deserve pardons more than Blagojevich and Martha Stewart. I think the president is really just sending a message with that he doesn't think those kinds of crimes are worthy of prosecution, and they do echo the kinds of crimes that he's likely to be charged with.
And it's interesting, and I'm not sure about this, I'll have to be checked, but I think Martha Stewart was eventually convicted of lying under oath, not the insider trading. So
I think you're right.
If Comey says she did know that there was
She lied about it. That's
yeah.
right. Yeah.
So I don't. Did the insider trading even happen? I guess it did, but I'm not sure what she.
Oh yeah, they had the goods on it, and she completely she lied about it.
Right. So they prosecuted her for that. So it'll be interesting because if lying is prosecutable with prison time, there could be a lot of people in trouble. Who are going under oath as time goes on. It's certainly an interesting time.
Right.
Eleanor, thank you so much for coming on.
Okay, sure.
Take care. Bye-bye. Eleanor Clift, for this day, we're done here. Coming up, much more programming. Stay tuned. Scott Spears headed for the dugout.
The Marion community, for over 45 years, providing sportsmanship.